Log Talk.
Well, God bless you and welcome. Welcome back to another episode of Can We Be Real? We greatly appreciate you and joining in this evening. We are coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. This is Reverend Carl White. And tonight we're going to be talking about voting and God and the political process. And does it make a difference whether I vote or not? And if it does, what difference does it make? And why should I vote? And how about if I just, you know, I go along with everybody else? It seems like most of the time poor people just get poor and rich people tend to get more. So what is all this political process about anyway? What the heck and where is God in all this mess? And people talking about separate God and the state and, oh, my God, what are we going to do about that? Well, we've got callers on the line. We're excited. We're looking forward to November 2nd election. I tell you, a lot of people, even on Facebook, are sending around the calls to suggest that we vote and asking you to get in the competition for the voting. And what should we really do about it? How does it really affect us? You can call in with your questions and your comments, or call a friend and have them call in, 347-855-8793. This is Reverend Carl White. My website is helpsomebody.net. And if you'd like to be on this call, just call in, 347-855-8793. So some of the questions we're going to be dealing with tonight, do you really lose your right to vote? Or can you get your right back to vote? How is it? Is voting against the Bible? But we've got some callers on the line right now, and we want to bring them in so that we can get right into this conversation, because this is something that is very, very contemporary as far as dealing with the economy, dealing with Wall Street, dealing with our president, dealing with the state of whether or not we can get more jobs, money for schools, for education. The whole ball of wax is tied into being able to vote. And we're bringing on Reverend Pat. Are you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Mr. Carl White?
I'm doing well, God bless you in a real way. We appreciate you taking a little time from your busy schedule. I know this voting and civil rights and all of these ideas on standing up for our rights and social justice is something that's near and dear to your heart. So how do you react to the question? You know, does it make a difference whether or not we vote?
Listen, it is imperative, man. We don't have any choice. See, you know, there is this underlying thing going on within the Republican Party and all of those that maybe did not trust President Obama because he was black, but they wanted to give him a chance. You know, and now he had to spend a lot of money because the government was just tanked. And now they're saying he's spending like crazy, but everything he's done has been to try to save the economy. We were headed for another depression. A lot of people don't realize that. We were headed for another depression. And, I mean, even today, when he came into office, it was 750,000 jobs a month being lost. Now it's down to 421,000 a month being lost. That is some kind of progress, man. But they don't want to give it to him. The Republicans have just demonized him. And, you know, we was looking for a conquering king, man. We was looking for, you know, we weren't looking for a Jesus spirit from the president. And Obama is just so calm and so collected, and he hates, you know, chaos, and he hates vitriol, and he hates all those things that, you know, keep from doing the people's business. And, you know, the people they didn't want another George Bush, but they wish he had a little Bush in him with his brains, you know, and he wouldn't be where he is right now as far as his poll ratings are concerned. He just seems to kind of take things too lackadaisical, you know, with me. Mm-hmm. That's the way it is. I can't do any better, instead of fighting for it and getting out there and using this bully pulpit. So, you know,
one of the things about politics, as we know, you've got to play to your constituents.
And yeah,
oftentimes,
and he hasn't.
And oftentimes the people that finance you are the ones that's kind of pulling the strings.
Right. Well, and that's what it looks like happened when he made the deal with the pharmaceuticals, you know, that we couldn't import drugs from Canada. Americans pay for the research for the drugs. Then they charge us an arm and a leg for them, and then send them to Canada and sell them at a fraction of the cost, and we can't buy them from Canada. It's just, you know, it didn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense to a lot of people. So a lot of people felt like, you know, he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing what we thought he was going to do. But, you know, it's one thing to campaign, Carl. It's another thing to legislate and to have to deal with politics and everything. But I think the thing, he's still the best man we've had. He absolutely is the smartest president I think we've ever had. He has more accomplishments than anybody since FDR. No other president has done what he's done in 2 years. And people don't talk about that. You know what I mean? A lot of people got some food stamps this week because he appropriated the money. A lot of people just still don't have the unemployment. That's because the Republicans voted against it. They still shipping jobs overseas. The Republicans voted to sustain it and to keep from stopping it. So we don't have any choice, man. It's Democrats.
Some of those words have been bouncing around a lot is like filibuster. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, it is, and I can't say it on the air, but you know what it means. It means just really.
Well, how about another word like obstruction, or obstruction, or just blocking?
All of the above, man.
A filibuster in the sense of the essence of the word is someone that just goes up and throws in a bunch of information or words just to take up the time that's allocated to vote on a bill or so forth, and it's really just a way of blocking. Say if both sides of the football teams went on the opposite side and gave the ball to the quarterback and the halfback, and everybody's just going to block them from being any progress. Oftentimes, some of the people, even President Obama was on TV last night with
John Stewart,
he was on there with John Stewart, and he asked him some hard questions, and he kind of raised up a little bit, which was a good thing in the sense that he was able to defend some of the health care initiatives, and he also spoke of some of the Republicans who would actually took votes because it was the right thing to do, the representatives from Virginia, from Ohio, and from Colorado, who actually were taking a lot of heat because they were going along with the president's agenda. And so they've had some Republicans that come across, and I think we don't want to demonize just one political party, but more or less, what are the policies of that party? Because we've got some Democrats who won't stand for, the health care initiative and looking out for poor people and looking for the interests of special interest groups. So what do you say about people like the Republicans who actually are, you know, standing up for themselves and standing up to do something to help the majority of people?
There's only been really two that have really crossed the line over two or three times, and that was the two women from, were they from Maine? Snow and what's the other woman's name? And you would notice that they are women, you know, because they're not.
You mentioned this, the one guy, Tom from Virginia, and the other two representatives from Ohio and Colorado on the Jon Stewart show. I didn't catch their names. But he said that they were actually three people who had stood up to do the right thing. So I think it's very important that we, you know, be able to look at these type of things and knowing that even in the midst of this, what is it that we can do to do locally? But how about the voting? You know, because oftentimes people get frustrated when they don't see a lot of change.
Yeah. Well, one thing, we're so used to seeing things happen fast and just a lot of people. And, you know, he said, man, people's houses underwater. They may have paid mortgages on houses, and the house is not even worth what they're paying the mortgage on. The banks won't lower the rates. You know, a lot of people couldn't have afforded those houses. And, you know, it's just all sorts of madness going on. But the bottom line is, who would you rather see in there handling this, McCain or Obama?
Well, I don't know of any other human who has been on the political front that I would rather have in that office at this point. So that's what I'm saying. And obviously when the individuals that elected President Obama to the White House office in 2008, yes, we were looking for change and we were looking for change quickly, you know, like the end to the war and to the prison in Cuba, and also some
Guantanamo,
of the health care benefits, Guantanamo Bay, and those things. And when you're being blocked, because we have to look at it when there's not just one office, is the president, that was one of the questions that was up on the poll, is the president really in charge, and what are the three systems of government?
Yeah, the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. Those are the three. But
the different branches, and who's really in charge?
Well, this is supposed to be compromise. I mean, that's the way it was built, for compromise. But you can't compromise with people that basically only see your color. And I don't care what anybody says. This is straight up racism, man. It's straight up racism. These Republicans, too many of them, they don't care, man. Just like McConnell, head of the minority in the Senate right now, he says his number one job will be to make sure that Obama doesn't get reelected, not to find jobs, not to help the people, not to see what we can do to get the economy rolling. None of that. They have one thing. Most Republicans are some of the meanest people. Even when they're not in office, they're mean people. And I tell you what, I don't care what nobody says. They can get mad at me, but I believe they are the Antichrist, if there ever was. If we want to see the Antichrist, just look at them. They say they're fiscally responsible. They're not fiscally responsible. Bush came in. When he came in office, he had a $183 billion surplus. When he left, it was a $3 trillion deficit. No president other than a Democrat has left this country with a surplus, but Democrats. Every Republican, Reagan, Bush, all of them left major deficits. Bush and Bush, you name them. Every Democrat left us with a surplus. Y'all can go check the records. You don't have to take my word for it. It is fact. They get them
all
tax
right.
They don't need it. You got a caller?
Yes, we got some other callers, and we're going to keep it going, too. So you stay on the line, Reverend Pat. We're going to get back with you. And I just got another email. Someone's talking about the Tea Party. And they say that the Tea Party has shown that it wants to return to a time when overt racism was considered acceptable. And it's a civil way of living life. There's one young lady, 23-year-old Lauren Val. V-A-L-L-E, she was trying to get a picture with Rand Paul and her satirical sign when she was thrown to the ground by a group of men. When she was pinned to the ground, one of the men intentionally stomped on her head. And
I
video
watched
caught
it.
Video caught the whole thing. So they've got an idea that violence and overt racism and taking our country back, I think what we really need to look at is saying, who are we taking the country back from and who are we going to give it to? Basically, we're all people, so what's the best in the interest of everyone is not always portrayed on TV. Stay on the line, Reverend Pat. We'll get back with you. Hey, caller from area code 510, are you on the line?
I am. This is Reverend Up. How are you, Reverend Carl?
Reverend Up, what's up? What's up? Bless you, man. Bless you. Good to have you on the line. I figured you'd have to get in on this one, and I seen that you've been listening a little bit, so jump right in.
Well, you know, I try and stay away from politics as much as possible because I have an inherent distrust of politics and politicians. Because anybody who wants to, who number one believes that they can really control things or wants to have that much power, I think needs to have some serious psychological help done. But I understand that this is our system. This is the system that we made up. And so it's the one that we've either got to fix or we've got to get rid of and create something else better that works for all people. I think what we're experiencing right now is a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody really wants to deal with the real issues, and Reverend Pat mentioned this earlier when you asked the question, what are the three branches of government, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive? There's actually a fourth branch, and it's called the media.
Okay.
The free press, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the role of the free press is basically to go out and find the information, not the spin, but the facts, present the facts to the electorate, to we the people, and operate in such a way as to basically keep those other three branches honest.
Yes.
When you had Woodward and Bernstein, right? They brought the mm-hmm. Nixon administration down because they were hunting for the facts, trying to find the truth. Right? Brought a president
right.
down. So when you had those kinds of journalists who had integrity, who were interested in the information and disseminating that, I think that kept those other three branches on their toes. But look at what's happened to that fourth branch. It has been corporatized. Most of the major newspapers are either gone or they've been consolidated under a larger media umbrella controlled by a very small group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Most of your major news is coming from General Electric, Disney, or Rupert Murdoch.
Right.
You with me? So
yes.
you've got to look at their interests. This really isn't about black or white or brown. No, this is about green.
Yes.
Right?
I think
and if
one
you've
of
got
the things too that
is controlling the media, then they are influencing the discussion. And that's
mm-hmm.
where the smoke and mirrors comes in. They got us looking at, this issue over there and that issue over there. Meanwhile, those that are governing things, running things, are stealing people blind.
Yes. And with the media, too, they no longer report news, but they operate on sound bites and
mm-hmm.
to basically to outrage and to draw disparities and to keep polarities going and people in place, in effect, leaning towards the current power structures that be. And it's almost a system of deterioration of the entire democratic process.
Absolutely. Chaos sells.
Yes.
The media, I would imagine, doesn't really want things to be fixed because then they would have nothing sensational to talk about. So their interest is in either, doing the sound bites, perpetuating the problems, talking about why everything is so bad. Oh, look at this war, crime, poverty, blah blah blah. It's the same stories over and over and over again. Because if they talk about what was actually working, right, then who would want to listen to that?
Mm-hmm. Now this
and
is from Cornel West. He's got a book called Democracy Matters. And he says, the rise of ugly imperialism has been aided by an unholy alliance of plutocratic elites with the Christian right, and also a massive disaffection of so many voters who see too little difference between two corrupted parties. And with blacks taken for granted by Democrats and with the deep disaffection of youth. Now, he wrote that in 2004, so that was 4 years before President Obama was elected.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is that the democratic process is almost, as we can see, they were just talking about the amount of money that's being poured into negative ads and negative campaigning and pointing out the differences in people. But one of the things I want to deal with is not necessarily just reporting on the negative aspects about it, but to deal with some of the apathy towards getting in the political process and making it change. Why is it that we think that we can't change it?
Well, for that, I go back to Maslow. Abraham Maslow was a
mm-hmm.
psychologist who had the hierarchy of needs. And
yes.
down at the bottom, he had physiological needs, air, water, food, sleep, shelter. Above
yes.
that, he had safety and security. At the very top of that pyramid was self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where voting, the democratic process, trying to move things forward, helpful to your fellow man, I think that exists at the top.
Yes.
If you've got so many millions of people down operating at the lower two levels, just trying to figure out how I'm going to eat, pay these bills, right. pay this mortgage, right? Somebody talked
right.
earlier about, you know, upside down in your mortgage. If you've got people living at the level of survival, they're not thinking about, oh, let me go down here and join this committee. Let me go over here and help this this politician do some fundraising. Let me go get signatures for a ballot initiative. They're just trying to worry about their own personal food initiative.
Well, that was one of the reasons why they came up with school lunch programs, because they found out that a lot of the kids, they weren't getting breakfast, and they definitely didn't have anything to eat for lunch, and so they couldn't pay attention in school. And,
exactly.
And like you say, if you don't have the basic necessities of a certain amount of nutrition, sustenance, a roof over your head, a certain level of security, then, of course, you're going to be at the odds with basic survival, and you will do anything to survive.
Yep. And so operating at that level, you know, you're not really thinking about the higher things. Let me go out here and get involved. You're just wondering, Lord, you know, where's my next meal coming from? Are my benefits going to be cut? And so
right.
now you're listening to whichever candidate is offering you, you know, the biggest crumb.
And one of the things that came up during my readings, it was in the letter from the Birmingham jail written by Dr. Martin Luther King. And he would said, well, during that time when he would be in jail, often the conversation would come up about economics and why we out here marching and why we're doing all of these things to maintain and obtain a certain level of civil rights. The situation kept going back and forth where he said he would be in there doing a little ministering, and he would talk to some of the guards and the sergeants and so forth on staff and come to find out that their salaries, when he found out how much money they were making, he found out that they were struggling just as hard as the black folk, and they need to come out there and to be marching and picketing with them because they couldn't make their ends meet just like a black person.
Yeah.
And the irony was that somehow, somewhere deep down inside in the psyche of their mind, because of their white skin and white privilege, that they had embodied, they felt that they were better than another black person who was in the same socioeconomic condition.
Mm-hmm.
And
Chris
so I'm
Rock
thinking
that
this is a certain mentality that feeds into what Dr. King called the drum major instinct. That I'm the leader, that I'm the big one, that I'm standing up here, that I'm so much better than the next person. But when it comes down to it, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, but this is where nobody's really talking about that. Oh, they're talking about, you know, the borders and gay marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things. But they're not really talking about the things that truly affect everybody. I don't care who gets married. What I care about is, can I feed my family?
This is where they have
hijacked the conversation, and they've gotten the religious folks all up in arms as a means of diverting their attention away from the real issues.
Yes.
If Bob and Steve want to get married, let them get married. Here's my thing. Can I feed my family? That's what
right.
I care about.
Well, on that issue, let's bring in Reverend Joe. Are you there? And talking about the sensationalism that's often portrayed in the media that keeps us disenfranchised and from connecting with one another. Reverend Joe, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm on the line. How you all doing?
All right, all right.
Good, good. I've really been enjoying the discussion, and there are some valid points that have been made, and as the Minister, I think from
Reverend Up
had mentioned, it's all politics. And when you understand politics, you have to sometimes distance yourself from it to an extent so it does not just bring you in where you feel overwhelmed, you know, to the point where, wow, the media, you know, with this spin and even though the economy is bad, but let me invoke the fear to make it appear that, hey, it's really bad, y'all, until you go into a state of depression and you don't even want to get up, you know, because it's so bad. But staying in line with the discussion as far as the voting issue, it is incumbent upon us to know that we have had a lot of folks who fought for this right for us to be able to vote. We have a lot of folks who have died. My roots come from Mississippi. Those civil rights workers who were murdered in 64, Cheney, I think it was Goodman and the shooter, Cheney, I know he was black, and the other two was Jewish white people who were working, you know, to help with this voter registration drive, and they had been bamboozled by the Ku Klux Klan, and they had murdered them. And so, you know, when we know our history, we know that there is just, we need to be engaged politically to the point of knowing that we cannot expect Barack Obama to be able to do all. We know. We don't need media to tell us that he had inherited a big mess. And so I feel hopeful in seeing what has been done with the time that he has been in office, knowing that there is still a lot to be done. Have he misstepped? Well, hell, he's not God. Certainly, we all misstep a little bit. But under the circumstances, somebody, because of a spin, had to denounce his minister, whom I know he loved. I'm talking about the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, because
right.
when they got through spinning and showing Jeremiah Wright saying, damn America, damn America, damn America, with that sound bite. But when if they had played that sermon in the entirety, they would have been able to understand. But they knew exactly what they were doing. And so President Obama had to distance himself from that situation and, you know, what more for a time like these where we do have a black president of the United States? And I just tell you, it's a great honor, and I'm glad that I live or I'm able to be in this time to bear witness of that. And I'll do whatever I can, but I certainly know that I'll be out there to put in my vote, and I will encourage others to do the same.
Yes, yes. Reverend Patrick, are you still on the line?
Still here. I agree to everybody. They said, I wanted to ask Reverend Up.
Yeah, he's on the line.
In this era of just confusion and chaos and almost a civil disobedience on the brink of looking at what the Tea Party has been doing. I mean, that girl that Carl was talking about at the Rand Paul thing, she weighed 115
mm-hmm.
pounds, and you got these two
mm-hmm.
big birds and this one man stomping on her head. The Democrats
mm-hmm.
The other night, another guy, a Democrat came to a Republican thing or something, and they arrested him. The police arrested him. And, you know, Sharon Angle is always talking about the Second Amendment. Resorting to the Second Amendment. You know the Second Amendment is guns, right?
Right.
So
the right to bear arms. Yes.
The right to bear arms. So if
mm-hmm.
this is in it, out there, and people I saw today where women are going GOP. These people are espousing against abortion in the cases of rape and incest. How could women possibly do this? But then, you know, I'm learning, I'm asking these questions, but I'm learning that when it was, and I don't want me to offend anybody, but there are some white people who don't care. It doesn't have to be in their best interest. It's because they're going to stick together with their people. Do you guys find that, or am I just, you know, just barking up the wrong tree? Because if the minimum wage is lowered, then they're going to lose money because they're in as bad a shape as black people, with the exception of what Carl said, the privilege of their white skin. But they will vote against their best interests. You know, and again, I'll say if John McCain would have been elected, there would be no Tea Party. So, I mean, we won't talk about race like we should. And I think as long as we fester like this and things start to, the rest of the world, I don't know if y'all looking at any international news, but they cannot believe that America's even tolerating the Tea Party to do anything. The rest of the world is going, they're shocked. These extremists, you know, so it's a long question, but is it cynical? You know, if we get cynical, does that mean we become apathetic?
Well, if we become cynical, yes, we can become apathetic. But here's the thing for me. Let me say three quick things. Number one, this is really about consciousness for me. Mm-hmm. And that's why my message and mission is about raising consciousness up to a higher level. And if we do that, right? Then number two, we've got to stop talking about race the way we've always talked about race. We think race is a color. It isn't. There is a mismatch between what science knows and what people believe. People believe that there are lots of different races. When I go around and I'm teaching, you know, in lots of places, I'll ask that question, how many races are there? Oh, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 10. No, there's only one race. There's no basis in science for the idea of race or ethnicity. There is no white race. There's no black race. There's no yellow or brown race. We are all 99.9% identical, genetically speaking. That's the conversation we need to engage people in. There is no, there's one race. It's called human.
It's called human, absolutely. But you see,
but we don't talk about that.
Not only do we talk about it, but they don't want to talk about it because then it
I know.
And then you do know what is about 2030 that the whites will no longer be in the majority. When was the last time you saw an abortion protest in a black neighborhood?
Mm-hmm. Now,
anybody?
Yeah.
Man, I don't like that term, majority and minority. We've got to stop referring to ourselves as being the minority. I'm a
right.
human being. I'm a grown man. I'm a child of God. There's nothing minor about me.
But does that has to do more with numbers, doesn't it? It's still stratification or it's still putting into categories. But
I know, but the danger in that is you start to believe it, that you believe you are a minority, therefore you are less than. That's the danger of numbers.
Yeah.
The third thing I want to say is go find a book called The Political Brain, The Political Brain by Dr. Drew Weston.
Mm-hmm.
This was groundbreaking research on the power of belief and identification with certain groups. They hooked hardcore Democrats and Republicans up to MRIs, and they tested them, and surprisingly, they all had brain activity. But what they found out was that once you get to a certain level in your belief system, Democrats, we're always right, Republicans, we're always right, once you get to a certain level of hardcore belief, your beliefs become calcified and you don't learn anything from new information. That's where most of the people who are hardcore Republicans or Democrats or Tea Party people or whomever are stuck in calcified beliefs. The politicians aren't going to them. They're going to the people in the middle who can still think and make up their minds. That's where
now,
the battleground is.
A couple of things have been brought up in the conversation is that I truly believe that human people are biologically not that different. That's very true. You can, if you have a tissue match and a blood match, you can transfer a heart from chest to chest. There's not a doubt about that. But sociologically race has a basis in our society because we keep it alive and well. Now, on the other side of the question is, how do we handle it? One person that his name is Tim Wise, and he wrote a book, White Like Me, Reflections on Race from a Privileged Son. It's a personal examination in which racial privilege and it shapes the lives of white Americans in every realm of daily life, employment, education, housing, criminal justice, and everywhere. And he uses stories from his own life. One of the things he says is that as a white man born and reared in a society that has always bestowed upon me advantages that it has been just as deliberately withheld from people of color, I am not expected to think the way I do. I'm not supposed to speak against and agitate in opposition to racism and institutionalized white supremacy. Indeed, for people of color, it's often shocking to see white people even thinking about race, let alone challenging racism. After all, we don't have to spend much time contemplating the subject if we'd rather not. Historically, white folks have made something of a pastime out of ignoring racism or at least refusing to call it out as a social problem to be remedied. And one of the things is that it often comes up is that people who are benefactors of keeping the status quo in place because I have a position or a certain amount of privilege based on keeping the privileged people in place, then I won't speak up against anything. I won't speak out against race. I won't speak
That's
up and tell
quo,
people.
That's the status quo, right?
That is wrote. Yeah, the status quo. But the person who lives like that, I would say that spiritually they are committing suicide.
Well,
they're killing themselves on the inside, and because they have such an emptiness in the inside that they can actually not follow that inner voice, that sound of the genuine that Howard Thurman spoke about. And so they'll always remain, as long as they don't be authentic and truly honest to the person that God has placed them to be, and whoever they call it, God, creator, or essence, or the presence, or whatever you want to call that essential quality in humanity that created all of us. And when you're not true to that sound, then it brings us to a point of ignoring reality. And that ignorance in reality, it actually kills us on the internal, and we become little puppets on the ends of ropes that can be pushed and pulled at the whelm of anyone.
Yeah, to and fro by every wind and doctrine.
There you go.
You know, so it's, I mean, it's biblical to that extent. But I tell you, I the thing that gets me is, and I'm going to keep saying it, I just don't understand how these people can say they love Jesus. And he told us the two great commandments was that you love the Lord thy God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And the second was like unto it, that you love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, these Republicans, man, they I don't care what anybody says, they are the Antichrist. I can't everything when you look down the you put compare what they think and what they want. They say fiscal responsibility, but they lie, and they lie so easily that people are deceived. And especially now, when there's doubt about Obama because he's a black man, and they don't think he knows. They know he knows. They know he knows what he's doing. But like I said before, he didn't come as a conquering king. He came as a gentleman. So then he let them beat up on him for years. Year and a half. Now he's trying to retrieve it. So he's got problems. He's got major problems because he lost his base, you know, to a large extent. But people just haven't been paying attention. Now they say that the enthusiasm gap is changing between you know, the Democrats and the Republicans. But all along I was saying, man, and he just said the other day on television, he didn't advertise what he was doing. There should have been somebody in the White House that did nothing but that. Whenever he did something, they should have bought ads, advertised. You know what I mean? It's like thinking behind. But I was thinking he was smarter than that. He knows how America is. If you're not up in their face telling them what's going on, like, it was the greatest tax cut in the history of the nation. 95% of all Americans got a tax cut. He didn't do like Bush and send a check for $650 to everybody. What he did was lower the taxes so that your monthly income, the taxes on that would be lower. But people don't see it, see? He did a much smarter thing. Instead of people going to spend the $650 all at one time, then it did, the economy goes back down. He says, I'm going to take it out every paycheck. I'm going to lower your taxes. But people don't know that. They don't realize that they've gotten a tax cut. You know, so it's just, I don't know, man. It's depressing to the extent that, you know, I think they could have done a better job. And a lot of people, you know, our people, you know, we vote for the president, but we don't normally vote in midterm elections. And that's you know, that's as important as the presidency, you know. But at any rate.
One other thing, too, historically, it comes from all the way back to the Civil War Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And and black people did not have the right to vote at the end of the Civil War. In fact, states put together governments excluding blacks from voting. And, in fact, women didn't have the right to vote either during that time.
Well, I remember my parents having to pay a poll tax in Texas.
and they also had a number of different tests. Blacks were blocked from voting.
Literacy tests,
threats
they call
of violence. The Ku Klux Klan was formed after the election of Rutherford B. Hayes to the presidency in 1876. Federal troops pulled out of the South, and the whites took over again. And that was after the 1863 Emancipation Proclamation. And so some blacks, they couldn't read or write, and so they couldn't pass tests. And some of the tests were so just so weird. They asked them how many raindrops fall on a rainy day.
I know, it's just ridiculous. But the thing is that the people that were passed, given the test, didn't know the answer either.
Well, nobody knew the answer. And so many other voting rules were designed to keep black folks away from voting. It wasn't until the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that was signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson over 100 years after the Civil War ended that it became illegal to stop black people from voting. Blacks finally were guaranteed their voting rights in 1965.
Yep.
And wait a minute.
That's
so
the history.
We were freed in 1865, right? And then we didn't get to vote until 100 years later. Come on, man.
100 years later.
Yeah, come on.
Okay,
and now
folks are overlooking their opportunity to vote now, and after folks have died. And I tell you, so many things, one of the things is no longer the bullet, but it's the ballot that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, them Tea Parties, man, they want to bring in the bullets, too, and that's what I want everybody to be aware of, is that they definitely are not afraid to use the bullets. Did you see that Republican down there in Texas, the black Republican that said that warfare is not everything is on the table to take back our nation? That's the thing that gets me. They act like the black Republicans act like they're going to be welcome in the party, and there is not one black Republican elected in one district in one part of the nation. In no part of the nation is there a black Republican elected to office of any kind. So
saying though. But even still, it's beyond skin tone. See, because it's an ideology, and just like Reverend Up would say, it's their consciousness, it's their mentality.
Or their
it's
lack
a mentality
of
that wants to ultimately control, subjugate, subterfuge, and put people in oppressive modes of behavior, such that we even now decide on how many prisons we're going to build according to the math and science and language arts scores of third graders. Okay, that is true. And many people think that slavery has been abolished according to the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which addressed slavery, which was not even mentioned in the United States Constitution, which was interesting. How are you going to have an amendment to abolish something that wasn't even mentioned in the Constitution, because slaves didn't have no rights whatsoever? But slavery is not abolished in the United States in 2010. Slavery is alive and well in the prison industrial complex.
Yes, sir.
It does say right in the 13th Amendment, if you read it, you'll see that it says, except as punishment of a crime.
Uh-huh.
And so you can have involuntary servitude. You can have major corporations that do everything from arc welding to making shoes to making. They don't only just make license plates. They have whole societies and cities built around the prison industrial complex, and we in America, we will pay a minimum of $19,000 a year, up to $50,000 a year per inmate to lock somebody up.
Don't want to spend $15,000 a year per student in school. Oh, but we'll spend $3 trillion for a war. And when it comes to education, the Republicans, they want to turn back public education. Do you want to take that back to 1865, man? People are not paying attention, and I think if they really paid attention to what's going on in my I have a professor, he's Nigerian, and he's a Republican, right? This seems like an oxymoron, but he is anyway. He contends that these things are not as major as we think. He contends that I'm an ideologue, but I understand the system. If the legislature gets enough of those wing nuts in there and they build a critical mass of thinking, and they can. They can. If the people are scared of them not being elected, reelected, they'll vote for them. You know, Michelle Bachmann, now they have a caucus. The Tea Party has a caucus in the Senate. People are not paying attention, man. They're not paying attention. I tell you, this is scary.
And they don't read history.
No,
because here's the thing. We have a society largely comprised of sheeple.
We do what we're told,
we're herded, right? Mm-hmm. We're usually sheared
and fleeced.
That's fleecing up here. Uh-huh.
other people.
But as long as we get to eat a little grass, okay, it's okay.
You talked about
slavery. Thank you. You talked about slavery, right, and the prison industrial complex. Let me take you one step further. Slavery is the natural state or end result of capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you explain
somebody
that one?
Think about it. We have an economic system that, and we're not going to do economics here, but let me just say here's the Cliff Notes version, that is comprised of income and expense. Yes?
Right.
Which one of those is guaranteed?
Expense.
Neither.
Expense is. Income is not.
Right.
Right? So now you are forced to go out and find some kind of job to make some kind of money just to guarantee your own survival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the job is not guaranteed. The end result of capitalism is to maximize profit. So that's every most corporation's ultimate goal, maximize
mm-hmm.
profit. Well, if I can maximize profit by shipping my manufacturing over to Mexico
mm-hmm.
or China or
right.
India or
right.
Sri Lanka,
yeah.
you with me?
Yes.
Yeah.
The corporation does not have a patriotic allegiance to the
mm-hmm.
idea of America. They have an allegiance to the idea of a profitable balance sheet.
Yes.
And
that's
taking
that's
your
very
job.
True.
They are shipping them.
Okay,
well,
so
is it unpatriotic?
Go ahead.
Reverend.
Pardon?
Is it unpatriotic?
Is what unpatriotic?
For them to do that. I know we're capitalists, but at a time when the nation is on the brink, and they're sending jobs overseas, is that being unpatriotic? I mean, where's their allegiance to the country as American citizens, as American patriots? Is it unpatriotic for them to do what they're doing?
You could make that argument, absolutely.
Well, and that's where I would think
that
I would say that the government needs to come in at that time and saying, well, if you're going to ship those jobs overseas after guaranteed all of these tax cuts that we've allowed you, then you're going to have certain amount of tariffs that are going to be attached to all of those imports coming back in here.
And who's responsible for drafting that legislation and passing it?
Well,
right.
See, and that's where the corporate lobbyists and so forth, they get in there, and literally they have basically sold out our political system during the Reagan years. The head of the J.P. Morgan franchise, he was one of the persons behind Reagan's rise to power and also his political agenda, where he came with his dribble down economics or Reaganomics, where they're going to put so much in at the top and they're going to allow these major corporations to have all of these tax breaks and to run unfettered. And so once they start making all of these enormous amount of profits based on collateralized mortgage obligations, which now have gotten us into the foreclosure mess, and in fact, that truly has, because the regulatory system has been taken out of it. And so now we hear all of these people on TV talking about reduce taxes so we can create jobs. Well, you had Reagan era, you had Bush 1, you had Bush 2, and so that was, what, 16, 20 years of that no taxes, and where are the jobs? Because they get the tax breaks, but they're not tied to actually creating any jobs.
No.
There is no responsibility on their part. There's no requirement that they do that. There's just an act of faith.
Then they engage in all type of
That you will bring jobs back.
Mm-hmm. They engage in all type of predatory practices. I just saw this on the news today. Attorney Bill Brennan, he was representing an 80-year-old lady by the name of Janet Harris, and they did a refi on her house. They offered her $108,000. She lived on food stamps and a small pension. So a few years later, the payments began to escalate, and then they wanted to go ahead and foreclose and take her house. And so they had predatory practices, and they're not doing it right. They're using flawed and fraudulent documents in order to take people's homes and kick them out based on all of these collateralized mortgage obligations that are tied to the LIBOR or the LIBOR and hedge funds, and people, nobody can even explain them. Okay? They can't explain them. And so, but the bottom line is that they have inflated house prices to the point now where they had to come into a, they had to collapse because they were overinflated. And the price of the house was so high, and then they took out a line of credit, and they're going around and actually taking all of this money out of the house based on the home equity line of credit, and God is blessing me in the field, and God is blessing me in the city, and even some Christian pastors actually encourage people to take out home equity lines of credit. Yes. And so they said that they contributed it to this foreclosure mess in society.
Sure. The Creflo Dollars, that prosperity ministry. You got money sitting there in your house. Take it out and go do something else with it. Well, they did.
You are literally sitting on a bank.
Yep, that was the word.
That's what they tell. And so it contributed to little old ladies like Janet Harris taking out the money of the house, and then it's tied to the exorbitant rates. And when the economy switched, then now she couldn't afford to make the payments, and they're pushing through all of these documents. So thank God for attorneys like Bill Brennan. He's with the Atlanta Legal Aid Society, and he's putting people first as opposed to profits, because we have moved away from the essence of humanity, which is taking care of people before profits. And I think that ties into what you were talking about too, Reverend, up on the essence of capitalism, that all it cares about is profit, not people.
The root of all evil is what?
The love of money.
Thank you.
And we're called
In
God we trust, but everybody else pay cash.
Thank you. Why does it say in God we trust on the money?
Yeah. Well, that
because
was because that was
totally trying
fun.
To get you to make God your money, to make money your God.
Don't we call it the Almighty Dollar?
Thank you. Wake up, people. Wake
okay.
Up.
So,
there's
but it's not about that.
There's subtle stuff going on.
See, we become so attached that we become the fatted calf, and we're consumed with consumerism. We've gotten so that our possessions possess us. I told my wife, I said, baby girl, I said, I love you, dear. You know I love you, baby. But the only thing that we ever own in life is all that we brought with us when we came here, and all that we will take with us when we leave here. So the essence of all of this so-called worldly wealth ends up to being nothing. And people sell their soul for nothing. I worked on Amtrak for a number of years. I met one guy on the railroad. Literally, it was a bad bet. He was somewhere playing, gambling, and it was a $10 bet. Somebody hit him in the head with a shovel over $10, and he died. And literally, we are killing ourselves over stuff that's temporary, over stuff that's perishing, over stuff that doesn't even matter. And we don't follow through on what laying up treasures in heaven, or what do you mean heaven? Where's heaven at? Heaven is a place in your heart. Heaven is when a child smiles at you. Heaven is when you can feed a stray cat and it comes back and you feel good for feeding the cat.
Hello.
Okay?
Okay, hello.
Heaven, a little piece of heaven is what we get when we have fellowship together and you see somebody you ain't seen in 10 years and it just feel like you just talked yesterday. Heaven is when you meet someone who you never have met and you have kindred spirits. And you're not out to use, abuse, or misuse that person or violate them in any way because you see the God in them and the God in you connect.
Yes.
Yep.
That's what we need to do. And I guarantee, I tell you, there's a shift going on in this country. And a lot of people just ain't taking this mess no more when you stomping on little girls' heads and pulling out guns and all of those kind of things. It's just like the gun has to answer to the authority of who gave you the gun.
Or who would you buy
even,
it from?
Even officers of the law and the duly sworn officers, if they pull that gun out and misuse that gun, they will have to answer just like any other criminal, and it has happened.
Yes.
But the essence of where we're going and what we're doing is that, we need to exercise our right, our right to vote, because some people say, well, it doesn't even matter because poor people get poor and rich people get richer, and it doesn't seem like it's going to change. But I think that's a very pessimistic view, and it's very myopic. We're coming down to the last 5 minutes. Please, each of my guests, all three of you, take a minute and a half, and I'll bring it home.
All right. Excuse me. I will go first. We have to vote, everybody. And you vote for your best interest, things that concern you and your family. If you believe that Barack, President Obama, is the man, if you believe that he has the program, although it's taking time to do it, then you vote for him. If you don't, if you think the Republicans are the ones with the better program, you're being deceived. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased, but you're being deceived. They have no intentions. They're going to put us right back where they had us before. They've already told us they're going to do it. They already said what they're going to do. So we know what they're going to do. We want to go take the nation back, vote Republican. If you want to take the nation forward, vote Democrat. I'm done.
Reverend Up, are you there?
Yeah, I echo the brother sentiments, and absolutely go vote. Participate in the process. It's the process that we have. So, do your research. Don't just believe what your party has told you or what your friend has told you. Do your own research. There is no shortage of information out there in the world. Go to the library, go to the internet, go to meetings. If you want to be informed, you can get informed. But make an informed decision. Be responsible and go vote. Like you said, vote for your interest. The other thing I will put out there is if you go back to your congregations, bring up that concept of separation and how we're all together and we need to start elevating our consciousness, and ask them, if you are really a true Christian, and you believe that the love of money is the root of all evil, then would you be willing to stand up and renounce capitalism?
Nope.
Yeah. that's a true Christian there.
If you're a true Christian, if you're not, then enjoy your hypocrisy.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. Thank you, Reverend Up. Reverend Joe, are you still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm still on the phone. I'd like to say that I really enjoyed this discussion with everyone, with Reverend Patrick, Reverend Up, and, of course, my Reverend Brother Carl. And I like to say, yes, we do have this right to vote. Let's not take it lightly. As Reverend Up said, do the research, do the due diligence, and understand the process of politicking. And usually, whoever sounds the best and seems as if it is a good option, then you go that way. I know if I go within my innards or the crawl space of my gut, it's let me know that we are moving in the right direction, and it may not be coming as fast as we like, but I do believe we're moving in the right direction, and I'm going to certainly be mindful when I go and cast my vote, and I'm very happy that we live in a time like this where we can have this vehicle to just be able to come together as, the body of God, and as Christians and as folks who want to be informed.
All right,
good.
Reverend Joe,
we got
30 seconds, and I got to close it out. All of my participants. God bless you all. And one of the things that was brought to my attention, we always talk about separation of church and state. Well, there's some parts of separation of church and state are good, especially when we think that we're going to control people by using God to manipulate and push forth our personal agendas. There needs to be a definite separation at that point. But one thing is that when we go to get married, yes, the pastor can marry you, but we cannot divorce you. So the other thing is that what you want to do is to know to do a SWOT analysis, S-W-O-T. So you look at the strength, you look at the weaknesses, you look at the opportunities, and you analyze the threats. And then you make your best decision on an informed basis. You've been listening to Reverend Carl White right here on Can We Be Real. We're here every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Tell your friends, call in 347-855-8793. Look for us on the web at helpsomebody.net. God bless you and God keep you until we meet again.